Godspeed Institute with Carol Hollenbeck, Sundays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome to the Godspeed Institute, an enlightening and positive forum exploring the world's religions and spiritual belief systems as an on-air classroom in an effort to help people better understand each other, promote tolerance, and foster peace. I'm your host, Care Hallenbeck. Alex Warden is a Sufi mystic who was born in Argentina and now oversees the Essential Oneness Project in Northern California. Its mission is to foster a consciousness of the fundamental unity of everything. Since 1985, she has been sharing with groups and individuals the knowing of the infinite unity and relatedness of life through her work in the fields of spirituality, education, dream study, women's wisdom, and energy dynamics. She is an international speaker, an educator, and a spiritual counselor, and has recently written about the Occupy movement from the spiritual point of view, which we will be exploring today as well. Alex, welcome to the program, and thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for inviting me to your wonderful program. This is a great honor.
Oh, thank you. Now, the mission of Essential Oneness, the consciousness of a fundamental unity of everything, I know it might sound daunting to listeners, but I suspect it's exactly what's needed in this world that is seems to be increasingly fragmented, and there's a lot of pain out there. And what we're talking about here is the solution to many of our problems. I'd like to begin, if you wouldn't mind, if you have a favorite Sufi philosophy or prayer or blessing that you could share with us first as a glimpse, a cameo.
Yes. Well, as you know, Sufism is a path of love. It's the path of the heart. And it does have a lot of stories that they really speak to me as a woman. One of my favorites is the life of Rabia al-Basri. And she's an early Sufi Christian of the 8th century. And after the death of her parents, she was sold to slavery. And the story says that she used to work really, really hard for her master. And then at night, instead of going to sleep, she would spend the night in prayer and meditation. And one day, her master saw her while she was praying at night. And he was shocked because he saw this wonderful halo all around her. And the impression was so strong on him that he freed her. Mm. She became really famous after that, and she had many disciples. But the most important aspect of her work is the concept of divine love. She was the first to introduce the idea that God should be loved for God's own sake rather than out of fear.
Mm.
And one day somebody asked her, "Do you love God?" And she said, "Yes." And then they asked her, "Do you hate the devil?" And she said, "No. My love for God leaves me no time to hate the devil." And that story for me always really touched me so deeply, because it means that when we concentrate on our love for God, everything else falls away. Mm. And really also it's the way, in many ways, women do things. And everything else falls away. Our dedication is what is most important.
Mm, thank you so much, Alex, for sharing that that vignette. That's very poignant and powerful. Now, tell us a little about your own journey, because I know that you were born in Argentina. Why don't you share a little of your unique path?
Yes, I was born in Argentina, and I actually lived there until 1996 when I moved with my husband, who happens to be American, and my two little children. I was raised Catholic and received much of my education in Catholic institutions most of my life, including college. But ever since I remember, everything like when I was very little, I can say about myself that I always had this kind of spiritual inclination. So my spiritual journey began when I was very, very young. For some reason, somehow, I always knew that there was something more to life than what we see in everyday existence, you know, in everyday life. So I was very open as a little child, like many children. And so I was very open to the unseen world, to what people might call it the angelic realm.
Yes.
And the difference is that probably a lot of kids, little children, as soon as their parents do not understand what they are talking about or do not see what they see, the children tend to close up a little bit. In my case, for some reason, I didn't close all the way, so I kept on having a very strong spiritual experiences, especially through dreams. And in my when I was a teenager, I began to expand the study of the Bible, and I really got hooked into studying Christian mystics. I really fell in love with St. Francis and St. Clare of Assisi, and also with Santa Teresa of Avila. And then this led me also to expand the reading of the sacred book into other sacred books. So what I began to really see is that there were similarities between in the message, in the essential message, that was beyond the words and beyond the stories. But really what this led me was into an inner quest in which I started trying a lot of different things. I researched many paths, educational, spiritual, psychological. I became a school teacher at one point, and I founded two schools. One was nursery and kindergarten, and then another one was a nursery, kindergarten, elementary, and middle school. And then what happened is that although I really loved teaching very much, something felt that it was always kind of missing. It was like I tend to believe that it was like a curiosity, that it, but in reality it was a kind of a dissatisfaction that I felt in my heart. I wanted to have the experience of God in my life, and I had been able to see this wonderful God quality or God essence in my own students, but I couldn't claim that in my own body, in my own self. All I could see about me were kind of my faults, my mistakes. Mm-hmm. Only when I moved to the United States and I found my teacher is that I really found what I was looking for.
Now, thank you. I just want to just stop you there for a moment because you're sharing so many insights here along the way. So you, coming from the Catholic tradition and education, you still were not able to feel sort of the embodied sense of God, sort of the indwelling of God that you were seeking?
It was...
What was the
I felt
thing?
That it was, yeah. it was an emotion... Yes, and it was, but it was more like an idea. It's like I could see God in my children, my students, but I couldn't claim that I was also a creation of God. And it was not that I couldn't, in my mind, say it. I could say it, but something in me, inside me, very deep inside me, couldn't grasp it somehow.
Yeah.
And what happened is that in the school that I went, it was not a mystical school. It was a school when they taught us the Bible and they taught us religion, but there was maybe it was unlucky in my destiny, but I didn't find a person that could live the reality of God so that I could learn to fit it in myself. You know, some things need to be modeled sometimes. Sometimes you need to find somebody. And that's why I fell in love with the mystics, with the St. Francis. For example, when I went the first time in my life to Italy when I was quite young, I was 17, and I went to Assisi. And I remember walking those streets and those walls of stone, and I remember crying because the stones were alive. I could feel, I didn't even know that St. Francis had blessed the city, but I could feel it, and that's what I wanted. I wanted that so deeply in my life. And I couldn't find it in the media that in the medium that I was. So well, somehow that's what happened to me.
It's interesting because, for example, you mentioned needing a model, and of course, St. Francis modeled that for Claire, and took her into his mission fully as the first Franciscan woman.
Yeah.
And I find that the mystical tradition of the church, which we discuss, you know, pretty often here, tends to be the door or the opening of understanding, basically. And you know, it sort of brings up the question: what's happening on Sundays?
When I was growing up, I went to Mass 3-4 times a week because it was almost mandatory in my school. But what happened, I think that maybe it's a part of the condition in Argentina at that time, in which it was really based on fear, and it was really based on faults. That's why I felt that everything about me were mistakes and faults, and I couldn't see my inner beauty. I just couldn't grasp it somehow.
And then you I understand that you experienced two what are called intense spiritual periods in your life that sort of helped to form your way. Could you share a little bit about what the intense periods were?
Well, as I told you, I kind of didn't really close up, so I continue having this very strong spiritual inclination all along. And like many mystics, I had many spiritual experiences. In my case, it was particularly through dreams. And the first intense spiritual period began when I was about to turn 15 years old, and I had a dream in which I merged into a blinding light of pure radiance that in that moment I interpreted as Jesus, because I was coming from that religion and path. And I went into a state of ecstasy that lasted for several weeks. But the lasting effect of the experience was the awakening of what I call relational consciousness, that it's a mind that works through empathy and by building immediate connections. And it has several ways of expressing, from the simplest connecting of dots or relating things, to states of absorptions of my mind into the higher mind. And it really has to do with the feminine quality of relatedness. And also the way very young children learn.
Yeah.
And with the awareness of the higher mind. But I didn't know at the time what was happening to me, and I felt very, very scared. And it took me several years even to be able to speak about it. I understood that it was related to that dream, but I didn't know how or why. So it was only when I read Maria Montessori's work, where she described in detail her studies of the child mind, and she calls it the absorbent mind, is that I had a clue. It was like a sudden awakening. Oh, this is similar to my experience and the way I experience life. So at that point is when I realized that I could live my profession and my spirituality intertwined, that they were both connected in many ways. And I studied Maria Montessori, and I work on the school on that level of education for over 10 years. So that was a very intense period for me. And the other happened really by coincidence or by mistake, because it was due to a complication during the delivery of the babies. They gave me an injection in a wrong place, I think. And and it led to an energetic awakening that really continued for many, many years. And the way it manifested was a lot of heat, a lot of vibrations, and I couldn't sleep for months.
Wow.
I was electrified, literally electrified.
Yeah.
Most of the time I had strong visions and a lot of experiences, and really matter at that point and spirit became kind of one, and things became perceived as energy. Mm-hmm. So the walls that separated me from people became really, really thin. So it was a very difficult time because I would just be invaded by
yeah.
other people's thoughts and feelings, and they are unconscious. So it was very difficult for me to root and to live in populated areas. I had to move away from the city. And really, I lost interest in life, in everyday life. It was not interesting to me. All I wanted to do was kind of remain in this inner space where I found peace and silence. So I became really secluded and very, very inward. But when my kids turned 3 years old around, I met my teacher, and he was the one that helped me root myself and kind of build a container to hold this awareness, because the fact of the matter is that these two experiences really transform my awareness, and they are really experiences of different levels of oneness. So
yeah.
My work today with essential oneness is working on reawakening the relational awareness in everyday life.
So let's share a little bit then about your discovery and experience of Sufism and the golden thread therein. If you could share a little bit about oneness, what it is, what drew you to the practice, or what filled up what was missing.
Well, I had known about universal Sufism from Argentina, but I was not really looking for a Sufi path. Being a Christian, that was not my immediate call,
right.
Let's say. So my feeling is that really Sufism came to me.
Mm.
I was when I was dealing with these energetic issues, and I just had arrived to the United States, I had two dreams. And in one of them, I was invited to dance by a man that I understood to be a Sufi Hindu teacher. And he told me his name, but I couldn't remember for many years. It was a difficult name for me to pronounce and remember. And then immediately after that, I had another dream in which I was shown the face of a man and his lineage within Sufism and a little bit of information about it. And I was told that he would be able to help me to deal with my energetic issues.
Mm.
Now, a few days later, I met a woman who was a Sufi guide, but not from this lineage that I belong, but rather from another lineage. But she was actually studying some of the material and following some of the practice of my teacher. So that's how, at one point, I was introduced to him. And when I did, I was given the practices of the path, which is the dhikr of the mantra, the repetition of the name of God. We also study dream work, and we also do meditation.
Mm.
And but he also gave me, that kind of practice is for everyone, but I receive a personal practice, my own practice, and that was a little book that my teacher told me that was the first book his own teacher gave to him, which is The Practice of the Presence of God by Brother Lawrence.
Yeah.
Which is a little book about this monk, a Carmelite, and the basic practice is to be with God all the time. So it's kind of similar to the zikr in a way, but it's not just repetition of the name of God, but it's to live with God the whole time.
Mm.
So this monk used to cook with God, peel potatoes with God, clean
yes.
dishes with God.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I was a mother, and I had children, And so that was the perfect practice for me. It was really difficult. The little book is really short.
Yeah.
And it's an easy read, but the practice really takes the rest of our lives, basically.
But this is so wonderful, you know, to listen to, because even as a Christian woman, the practice of Sufism has been a great, great tool, and your personal practice to help you in your gifts and in your life. Now, you know, in general, we've discussed Sufism previously with guests on the program, including Llewellyn Vaughn Lee and Saeed Hossein Nasser, Stuart Bitkoff, award-winning Sufi blogger David Pakliot, and they have all been male thus far. So I really invite you to share about your experience of Sufism as a woman, because this is a very important perspective.
Yeah, thank you. Well, in our lineage, one of our spiritual ancestors used to say that the woman is like gold.
Yes,
she's
indeed.
Like, that she's like the earth, and she's never impure. Mm. So, in a way, for me to be in my path, it's really kind of comfortable. It's quite well. I feel quite welcome, because there is already a deep respect for the feminine nature, and it's a respect that is not always seen and appreciated. And coming from Argentina, where there is kind of, at least in my days, there was a lot of machismo, that was really important to suddenly find a space in which my nature was valued, was respected. But there are other reasons which I find the Sufi path really wonderful for me, and one of them is that it's a devotional path. It's really a path of receptivity, of listening, waiting. Mm. And it's a path of longing. It's this this need of the cup waiting to be filled. So those are real feminine qualities, or qualities that women, we can feel very close to them. At least that was for me.
Yeah.
And besides longing, it is said that it's the feminine side of love. While the masculine side is I love you, the feminine side is I'm waiting for you. So that is also really close to me as a woman.
Mm. And go ahead.
I was going to say that also Sufism is more a state of being rather than doing, which, again, it's kind of feminine. And because Sufism is really not a monastic path, at least not my path, what happened is that I could be in my spiritual practice the whole day while I was doing everything, which has relationship to the practice of the presence of God also, and which meant that I felt that I could reconnect with my own feminine nature, but at the same time I felt that the spiritual path was not dividing me, was actually unifying me. Because sometimes what happened to me when I went to church, for example, when I was younger, is
yeah.
that it felt to me that the Mass was beautiful, but then after that, it was difficult for me to connect one moment to my reality of everyday life. So I kept on feeling guilty, but now it was until I could make confession again. So it was very different for me. It's like the whole time I can be with my beloved, and everything that I touch and I see is a creation of the beloved. So I'm close to God inside and outside the whole time.
And by the way, thank you for that answer. I love that you're like gold. I would agree. The women are like gold, and gold is at an all time high right now.
It's
better and better.
True. Maybe that's the reason why.
Yes. So, and it sounds like there's a great balancing here, because you're also a doer. We know that. You know, you found a school, you teach, you travel. You are a doer.
I am a doer, but what I learned through Sufism is really to do from a state of being, which is what spurs in the moment. It's just to be really connected with your heart, with our heart, and then from there find the proper action. The difference from just doing would be, in my case, would be just not thinking about it and just reacting. I think that what we learn through any spiritual practice, really, not just Sufism, at least in my experience, is to really be connected to the heart and come from that place, which is closer to being, although it's true that we're doing things. Yeah.
Yes, and I understand the word Sufi itself means wool, to aspire to a heart of wool, soft like wool.
Yes, it is. And also, it's when you really become so soft within yourself, your nature becomes so pure that that's from where you come, from where your actions take place.
And that's so important because, you know, for busy people all the time who are tasking and going on to the next task, and it can get stressful, the focus being put on being changes all of that. It changes the whole perspective as you focus on being throughout your day.
Yeah, and I think that women are closer to that. I think that maybe because we have the capacity to become mothers, whether we do it or not. I think that is kind of an inward experience. It's something being created from within, and that is similar to the experience of being.
Thank you so much, Alex. We are halfway through the program right now. We're just going to take a quick break. You are listening to the Godspeed Institute live on the Progressive Radio Network. When we return from the break, we'll continue our conversation on Sufism, education, and Occupy with Alex Warden of Essential Oneness. Let's spend a couple of minutes now with an old favorite. Stay with us.
What the world needs now is love, sweet love. It's the only thing that there's just too little of. What the world needs now is love, sweet love. No, not just for some, but for everyone. Lord, we don't need another mountain. There are mountains and hillsides enough to climb. There are oceans and rivers enough to cross, enough to last till the end of time. What the world needs now is love, sweet love. It's the only thing that there's just too little of. What the world needs now is love, sweet love. No, not just for some, but for everyone. Lord, we don't need another meadow. There are cornfields and wheat fields enough to grow. There are sunbeams and moonbeams enough to shine. Oh, listen, Lord, if you want to know.
Welcome back to the Godspeed Institute, and thanks go out to Burt Bacharach for a sentiment that's timeless and probably getting more important as the years passed. You are live with CARE, and we've been talking about Sufism and oneness with mystic Alex Warden. Alex, in this segment, let's focus on education and children again, and the minds of children a little more, as well as your thoughts on the Occupy movement a little while in light of spiritual principles. Now, you founded a school in Argentina and you taught for years. What did you learn?
Well, the first thing that I really learned was that was a shocking experience after about 7 years of teaching, in which I realized that I didn't know anything about teaching and that it was, there was nothing I could teach. It was startling, really. I think that is a common experience when we follow a philosophical or spiritual path to come to become less and less know. It's like as we go through, we know less and less as we get closer to the beloved. But this was a physical experience, in my profession, so it was really, really shocking, and I was not really expecting it. And what happened is that I began from scratch, like Maria Montessori had done, basically following the interests of the kids by sharing with them learning that I had, and by letting them know that I was open to listen to what they had to say about that, and I got really curious about what they felt or what they knew. This really combined with the way my mind worked, which made very easy connections, ended up letting me to understand that I was really a facilitator, a medium for them to find something within themselves. I also understood that the only thing that I could really do for them was to awaken or keep awake their curiosity and their desire to learn. It was a really humble experience that one. It just, I realized that as a tool, what I could do was just to help them remain awake so that they would find whatever they needed to learn, and they would have the curiosity, the intensity, the power, and the stamina, you know, the persistence to learn whatever they wanted. But then I also realized that one of the issues of education is that the teachers are so focused on specific issues that in a way help us get divorced from ourselves.
Yes.
And up to the point that you find adults that you have the Freudian and then the true Freudian and then the true Freudian but kind of. And it's like all these branches that become highly disconnected from each other, and up to the point that they don't recognize their origin.
Yes.
This that happens outside also happens in us internally. The more we become so specialized, if we cannot remember or reconnect somehow with the source, we become really divorced of ourselves. So what I realize is that even when, in order to perfect a learning, we kind of need to become quite specific and detailed, if we can teach children through relationships, through like the history of things or how things came to be, how they branch out, and we do this every time we learn something new, then we can bridge the gap of separation and isolation that occurs in a compartmentalized mind, and unfortunately that affects the whole of who we are and what we feel about ourselves.
Well, you bring up such an important point here in education, where especially, you know, here, well, perhaps in more place than one, but there's such an emphasis placed more recently on performance and grades and test scores, to the point where it is a spiritual issue. It comes down to how do we value ourselves, how do we value children, how do we want children to see themselves.
Exactly.
What is their connection to this learning? Because even if they achieve the straight A's, they may not be developing any particular genuine self-esteem of who they are, in who they are in their core as a person.
They really feel like a machine.
You know,
it's what you were talking before about doing. It becomes completely disconnected from themselves, and they really, besides eating. It really stimulates memorization, and memorization really doesn't teach us much. What really teaches is what we can live and experience and really feel from the heart. So that was something that I realized that was what it was needed at this time. It was just, we had become so divorced that we really needed to go back to building those connections. And because children naturally are like that, because children come from the soul, their soul is so much with them before they develop their personality, it's very simple and it's very easy for us really to be attentive to building those connections consciously, because the way they perceive oneness is really unconscious in the beginning. They just live it. Mm-hmm. But if we can, as soon as they start developing a different quality of the mind in which they start separating from that oneness, if we can build conscious connections, then what happens is that they continue growing and they don't need to do what we or I had to do, which is to go back and see where my soul was, where it got left somewhere on the road. So it's an easier way back. It's like Hans Hesseli Gretel's story. You know, you leave the little tables to be able to get back home.
Yes, and that's, you know, it's interesting. Children do have sort of this naturally unified concept of life. And I remember this rather desperate second grade class that I was in when I had difficulty learning fractions, taking things apart.
Yeah.
And my teacher talking to me about pizza slices and me saying, but it's one, but it's
that's
one.
Right.
And she was saying, yes, but I wasn't getting it. And it was like a who's on first Abbott and Costello routine in my second grade class. But the I guess the odd thing, but also the beauty of it, was that I was reading music in the next classroom over, which is all fractions and all intuitive, and I understood it implicitly.
Exactly.
At the same age. So there's a, you know, what it is we're learning, what is it for, what's the context, does it create anything of beauty, of meaning? These things were, you know, affecting me as a small child. I'm sure it affects many.
I think it does, and I think that we have become, in a way, a culture, a meaningless culture, in a sense. It's sad to say, but we are losing meaning in our lives. The level of disconnection that we are reaching is so enormous that meaning got lost, got on the way, and people are feeling that aloneness and that loneliness, more than aloneness, this loneliness, this kind of desperation of feeling completely isolated in a moment in which we're going into global really awareness. So it's a really interesting dynamic.
It is. And as we're talking about global things right now, perhaps this is a good time to move into what is called the new era, which I saw mentioned on your website. The new era, what is it? How will we prepare ourselves and our children for the life to come?
Well, the new era is this time we're entering right now. It's an era when our perception is kind of shifting very fast from the particular and local to beyond the borders and global. So in many ways it's a time of deep contradictions, because the best and the worst is available to us. It's visible worldwide. We go into the internet and we find the most horrific things and the most amazing things within seconds, and we have access to everything. And it's a time when we really need to learn to live as if we had a double awareness, that of the me as an individual, while at the same time we really deepen our knowing of our relatedness to everything else.
Mm.
So because children naturally understand oneness, they are much more able really to understand also relatedness in everything they do. Because for children, everything is really alive. It's a little bit what you were saying about the music. It was alive to you, so you were able to understand it. You capture it, the essence of it, without even thinking about it. So that's the way children work. So as I said before, one of the things that I try to remind myself with my own children and also when I work with people is we need to rediscover the wonder of being we rather than just me. You know, mm-hmm. It's like it's important to know that every one of us is special, and at the same time, everyone else is special as well. There is not really a better or worse on that level. I think we need also the energy of this new era. In a way, it's breaking apart some concepts of what is really good and what is really bad. Things are becoming really kind of in the intermediate grays, because we're observing that what seems to be very good for one country sometimes deteriorates another.
Devastating. Yeah.
You know, we throw trash out of the window and we clean our house, but that trash goes to infest everyone else. So we are becoming really aware that what seems just perfect is not necessarily so, and some things that look maybe bad from the distance are things that we are really causing to ourselves.
Yes, thank you so much for that. Now, recently, a couple of weeks ago, you posted on Huffington Post a piece about Occupy Wall Street and the 99% called The Painful Process of Awakening a Citizenry. And in the first paragraph, I'll quote you, "This movement is the result of a change in human consciousness that has been slowly developing in the world. This awakened awareness and vision is empowering people to change the status quo in response to a feudalistic and tyrannical system that at this time in history is taking the form of corporate greed and power." And I would like to be able to explore this a little more in this segment of the program, as well as how does oneness work through these issues? And let's talk about awakening the citizenry at home and abroad.
Well, one of the things about oneness is that everyone is being touched by it. So the changes that before took years to take place are now happening kind of all together around the world at the same time. So, for example, the French Revolution happened in France, and it took a few other countries and cultures, but basically was a local event that ended up affecting the rest of the world. But right now, when something happens in China, we all know. So it is whatever is happening to all of us in a certain way, even if we are not enacting that situation. In the case of the movement, the Occupy movement, in particular the idea of the 99%, tell us that somewhere we are really becoming aware that it's not just one, but we are just really many, and that humanity is one humanity.
Yeah.
And that is becoming more and more a reality in our lives.
Yeah.
To understand that really the one humanity is being expressed by with many heads, let's say like that, but and many hearts, but it's just one. So the way movements happen is that they affect each, the movement is one, but it affects each culture in its in particular way, because each culture has to solve their own particular issues of freedom.
Yeah.
This is what happens with this in this moment, is that people is becoming aware that there are forces that are really stopping us from developing a healthy connection with our planet and with ourselves, and that there are in the same way that we want to free ourselves, there are negative forces or forces that are trying to do the opposite. They are trying to dominate us. But because, again, before this was happening on a very small, like a feudalistic system, who would be affected? Would just the lord and the people that lived around him.
Mm.
But now this has become really open. So these systems of power, that this power greed and these systems that really want to contain us are also working globally.
If I may, it's we're at a time where there's a a ripple of economic falls. Let's say, for example, in in Europe and the U.S., there's rippling in the world, in the Middle East, changes of government, and it's like dominoes. It's going from one to the next to the next to the next.
Exactly.
And at the same time, we have a technology that's allowing us to watch it all as it's happening.
Exactly.
So everyone is aware of this as well. So we're in a very, you know, unique time right now where much is being revealed. And as you say, the, you know, citizenry is awakening.
Yeah, it is. It is, and it is important what you say, is that everything is in our face right now. Whether we like it or not, it's happening before us, and we have to be witness. And this is affecting our way of thinking, our way of feeling, our way of living our life, and also our way of understanding life. When I talk about feudalism, is because it's a kind of a consciousness in people to be afraid of asking or expecting to have a good, a normal good living, a decent living.
Yeah.
It's like you rather have the Lord, I don't know, with all the jewelry and get really well dressed and be proud because he enjoys life while I am paying for it. It's kind of a strange dynamic that used to happen.
Yeah.
And I think that this is one of the things that people are really awakening, saying is not envy, as some people call it. It's rather saying, oh, you have what you want, and I want to have some of the things that make me feel better as a human being as well. If you look at the movement, it's really people looking for freedom and to having just a decent human life. There isn't a lot of much of another thing that it's really happening, and it's really interesting that that these other forces are really trying to prevent that from happening. So,
yes.
So in a way, what is happening also is that people, when we wake up, they are becoming both angry and fearful. So many also are covering their eyes. They don't want to see what is happening because it's really painful. So it's really an interesting time. It's both a time of great opportunity,
yeah,
an opportunity to live consciously closer and more open to this vision of oneness that is actually the way the soul sees.
And now, having this opportunity where so much is being revealed, people are awakening, what is then the role of spirituality or spiritual-based values as the solution? How does that oneness help us get through this time?
I think that, first of all, if we, the people that are trying to transmit somehow spiritual values, be parents, speakers, priests, or speech persons, whoever is trying to develop that, one of the ways that we can help is, I'm going to give your example.
Go ahead.
No, it's true, because what you do, which is about tolerance and about really to understand.
Oh, you're going to give me as an example.
Yes.
I got it.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, what you do is a way to awakening people through compassion, through extending our arms, through holding each other, to accept who we are, and to understand that we have the right to be who we are, and the other does too. That's what brotherhood is. That is what is to put yourself in the feet of another. That is, it's a basic real, I learned that when I was little. This is my Christian faith, really, but also in Sufism, it's the same. You see the other as yourself, and you start to build these bridges of understanding, of compassion, of friendship. And this doesn't mean that you need to transform yourself into the other. It just means that you can let the other live. And so then slowly, this awareness of respect, which is real spirituality in reality, because that was oneness is, because there aren't 1,000 gods. That is just not true. There is one God, and we all come from that place.
Mm-hmm.
all of us come from that place. So if we can go back to that core and say, God wants to experience life in so many millions and quadrimillions of experiences. Look at the rainbow. The rainbow has all these colors, and there is no one color better than the other. They all live together, and they all form the one light. So this is the same for us, and I think that if we can bring that this consciousness, even without calling it spirituality, just calling it almost common sense, it's the way to do it. And sometimes I feel, and one of the reasons that essential oneness really works with all kinds of people, not Sufis, just anyone, is because I almost want to pull out the idea that it's just only spiritual. Oneness is not, it's experienced through spirituality, but it's experienced in our everyday lives. Mm-hmm. And if we can bring that awareness to our little things in where we do things, when we think, and we can build these bridges like you do in your programs, then things will get embedded in spirituality, whether you call it spirituality or not.
Thank you so much, Alex, for sharing that with us. And, you know, I want to say from the years we've been doing the program, I can say, speaking to folks around the world, that the trend is not away from God. It's away from the things that inflame us, disrespect us, suppress us. And conversely, the trend isn't toward some kind of unified faith either. It seems to me that we're moving into a time of the sacred in which everyone is invited to the table in fully dressed and in bright colors, exactly as who they are, and that we connect on this level, as you mentioned earlier, the mystical level, that does raise us up, you know, from some of the factors that can weigh people down, categorize their thoughts, and raise us more towards this just unified, beautiful expression of humanity.
Yeah, definitely. And I am very hopeful. I understand the dangers of the time, but I'm very, very hopeful. I see a lot of people, especially young people, are really able to understand. I see this in my own children. I see this in other children when I work. Children are very close, and they are the generation that is going to be the ones that are going to really live this new era. And they are much more open. Kids have tremendous amount of compassion. They have tremendous amount of this tremendous quality of charity. They understand the suffering of animals. They understand the suffering of plants. They understand the human suffering in ways that sometimes we forget. And so they are, if we can build in them the feeling and the knowing that they are powerful and that they can change the world for the better, that is also something that we can do for ourselves, because we adults sometimes are tired of walking, tired of the fight. We feel exhausted. We feel that we cannot go on anymore, and we lose the hope. We lose the knowing that we can change the world by changing ourselves, by changing our own little area where we live, where we move, our little room, our little family. And so children do not have that. They are not tired. They're full of strength and power and this gold energy all around them, and they are the ones that are the openers of this new era.
Thank you so much, and you know, help us to connect with that little child inside us as well.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, Alex, if people wanted to learn more about your work and all the services and your speaking and everything that you offer, where should they go?
Well, they can go to essentialoneness.org, which is www.essentialoneness.org. They can also find me in Facebook at Essential Oneness, and there's also all the information if they want to ever contact me or know more about me.
Well, thank you so much for our conversation today. I just want to thank you again for being on the program. It's been a very meaningful and informative hour shared with you.
Thank you very much. I really had a great time.
And listeners, before we close the program, I just wanted to offer a tip or two for your spiritual tool belt that you wrap around yourself each day. In addition to the books that Alex mentioned earlier in the program, I wanted to also suggest get hold of an old classic, Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl, I think 1959. We talk about suffering, and he sure was there at Auschwitz and found a way to find meaning and purpose no matter what we go through. So pick that one up. I'm sure it's at Amazon, Man's Search for Meaning. And also these words on oneness from Peter Kingsley in his book, A Story Waiting to Pierce You. All of a sudden, symbols of oneness had become twisted into our familiar myths of supremacy and separation, and it was this illusion of superiority, that mirage of knowing better, which has brought us to the end of our world. So, with that, we move forward to regain our oneness, to regain our unity, to regain the energy of childhood and that imagination and vision. Thank you for joining us on the Godspeed Institute today. This program was recorded live on the Progressive Radio Network in New York City and produced by Michael Hallenbeck. If you'd like to hear this or any of our previous programs again or send it to someone, simply go to GodspeedInstitute.com. Please send your comments to office@GodspeedInstitute.com. We always enjoy hearing from you. The Godspeed Institute is an independent educational organization dedicated to promoting religious tolerance and celebrating the value of spiritually based living. Join us again as we continue to explore all the world's religions and spiritual belief systems. Until then, we wish you Godspeed on your journey.